An uplifter is
a compelling leader
who tries to breathe life and hope into people around them,
who listen and care and guide and help,
whose way of being in the world inspires,
who uplifts with humor and understanding,
who leads by example,
don't judge,
vulnerable,
bold, determination,
who are here to create a better world,
who can learn and teach,
who encourages you,
who shines their light to lead other people,
who uses their best self in order to help others.
I found the life that I liked and I worked toward that.
We are all uplifters. Mwah, big love.
Welcome to the Uplifters Podcast. I'm Aranza Savas. I've gotten to talk to a whole lot of inspiring and extraordinary women. One of the things I've noticed about these women is that almost none of them planned to be where they are right now, and that it was through life circumstances and unexpected shifts that they found themselves stepping into strength and this place that left the rest of us feeling inspired, but maybe left them feeling like they were walking into a wilderness. And I expect that every single one of you out there listening to this can relate, because life is full of surprise twists and turns. And the story you'll hear today is big evidence of that. I first heard the story of Brian Johnson at a Moth event, and was extraordinarily moved by his journey. But I kept watching out of the corner of my eye this woman off to his side. And I looked over at my husband, who was sitting next to me, and I said, I want to know her story. So it is with great joy that I get to spend some time today talking with and sharing with you the story of Christy Johnson. Christy, welcome.
Thank you for having me today. It's when you reached out to me, I'll try not to cry through the whole episode.
It's okay. We're in this together.
When you had reached out to me in that same day, I had a couple of other people reach out, and generally the reach out is for Brian, right? I was like, that one was for me. I'm like, no one ever reaches out to me. And so then I read it, dug in a little further. And then when you and I connected, and I was laughing because you mentioned you saw me off to the side and you were watching me. And I was laughing because during rehearsal, I was standing right next to Brian in the spotlight, because generally I don't go too far from him because his needs, you know, happen instantly. And so I'm usually just right there, or if we've done another event, they just pull up a chair and I just sit there. I'm off to the side. It's his game, but I usually am there. And at this rehearsal, they were like, oh, maybe can you take a couple steps to the side? Okay, maybe a little bit more. And then I was like, I paused them and I was like, guys, you can be straightforward. You don't want me in the spotlight. I got it.
Move it on over.
I'm not here to be in the spotlight. I am literally just being attentive to my husband. So I was like, I see the dark space over there. That is my spot. I got it. And which I'm fine. I'm not there for this spotlight, but I just thought it was very funny. And then for you to say, I was watching you, it was just ironic. It was funny. And thank you for seeing me.
You had your own light over there in the dark corner. And I was just so moved by the gentle way that you set him up to be successful, and the way that you lent focus and really created focus for all of us on his story and an appreciation for who he was just through your loving attention. I think that is something that as women we do in so many parts of our lives, but we don't necessarily get to observe the effect of it. And so it was a real joy to get to reach out to you. Now, you and I are in on this secret about Brian's story, and I think everybody else listening is probably like, what? So can you give us a little recap of the big shift that changed the trajectory of your family's lives?
Brian and I have been married for 21 years, and we have 5 kids. I was 19 and he was maybe 26. I had a kid at 21, 22, 23. So our kids are 19, 18, 17, 15, and 12.
Wow.
So our first four are all boys and they are biological boys. I had all those babies. And then once we decided that we were happy and okay with birthing no more babies, we both had always just had the desire to adopt. And so separately, before we were, it was just something we both always wanted to do. And we kind of talked about it, but it was just like one day, it was far off. Like when we're, you know, finished having biological children, then maybe we'll look into it. And so when our youngest boy was 18 months, we started the adoption process for a little girl. And we wound up adopting her from Ethiopia.
It's like you're out there really just making your dreams come true.
Yes. So we're not dreamers. We're doers. We're very on purpose. I'm a go-getter. Like if I see it, we're going to get there. Don't even question me. Brian still hasn't learned after 21 years. Somehow we're going to make it happen. And it might not look what we wanted it, but it'll happen. And we both were born and raised in the suburbs of New Orleans in a town called Kenner. We picked up our five young children and moved to the city of New Orleans in the heart of the city. We bought a beat up, rundown old house and renovated the whole thing ourselves. So in 2020, when the whole world shut down for COVID, we were gearing up for hunkering down with the seven of us in our house. I think it was 4 weeks into COVID. And prior to that, Brian had a sprained ankle and he was kind of dealing with it on and off since October. I was like, it's your sprained ankle. It's your problem. I'm not your secretary or your assistant. You need to schedule those doctor's appointments yourself and be a big boy and make it happen. And they just weren't finding anything. So then like Mama Bear had to come out. Something's wrong. It's not getting better. Something has to happen. This is ridiculous. And so, of course, I jumped in, took over like I do. And again, COVID had started though, but this ankle and some other things were just starting to happen. And the world was shut down. Doctors were closed. They were not answering. My best friend from my childhood is a pediatrician in New York. She was in New York City at the time. I messaged her and she was like, okay, well, they have this big group in the medical community going on right now that we can post things and people will respond and we can try to make things happen that way. Crazy enough, she did that, posted it out there. This guy was a resident of a neurologist here in New Orleans before he became a doctor. So he was like, I have a contact with Dr. Edwards in New Orleans. So this guy, I don't even know his name, nothing, called me. And I was explaining to him all the things that Brian's going through. And he's like, I just want to tell you, this does not sound good. This is not a sprained ankle. And I was like, okay, we need to get this ball rolling. And he was like, I am going to put a call in to Dr. Edwards and see if you guys can get in immediately. We walk into this doctor's office, us and the doctor, no nurses, lights are not on, like it shut down, COVID. The hospital is eerie. We go into this appointment, tell the doctor what's going on. And he does this 4-minute assessment and he sits back and he was like, I really hate to be the one to tell y'all, but this is ALS. And here in New Orleans, we know what ALS is here because we have a famous retired NFL football player, Steve Gleason, who has ALS. And so he even had a documentary come out a couple of years ago that our family went to the movies, we watched it. And they actually live right in our neighborhood. And so we are all aware of ALS here and we know what it does. And so it was just hearing him say that, I thought we were literally going to the doctor to get started to figure out what is happening, not to get a diagnosis. And so it's just one of those days that just changes your life forever, right? And so we took the news in and then the doctor, even he was like, I am 99.9% sure that this is what it is, but I want you to get a second opinion. And so about 2 weeks later, we saw his colleague and she confirmed that it was ALS and then just kind of helped us with like what we were going to need to do moving forward. And so immediately from that, I contacted people, Steve Gleason, his main like caregivers. One of them is a childhood friend of Brian's. The other one was my kid's PE coach in elementary school.
Oh my gosh.
So we already had these connections. And so we were immediately able to get in touch with those guys. And then we just did a deep dive right in. And so for COVID, for us, it wound up being a great timing. Bad timing on the doctor getting things done like that. But as a family, and especially a family of seven, I mean, every single activity in our schedule was closed. It was off. We had made our own little neighborhood pod of eating dinner together every night. And our neighbor cooked. She taught our kids how to cook. And it just really became this really beautiful community experience. And so we all grieved together. We didn't tell our kids for a little bit because they were at such different ages then. And we were able to explain it to our older ones, just different than our younger ones. And again, the ALS is well known here. So they kind of knew, I guess, what the end all would be because Steve is already trach at that time. And so we just had days in bed of crying and days in bed of laughing. And we spent a couple of weeks of being really sad. But then it was like, okay, how are we going to live? And immediately I planned this big surprise vowel renewal for us. I didn't have a wedding ring anymore because when we were doing our adoption for Zoe, we pretty much sold anything and everything we could to raise money for that. And so we sold my engagement ring at that time. He didn't know we were doing like this official wedding renewal thing, but he wanted to get me a ring and it was just so cool. We went to just like this little New Orleans shop. I'm not really like a diamond type girl, but I wound up walking out with a diamond, but it is a uncut, unfinished, raw diamond that is worth nothing probably to other people because it's not shiny and glamorous, but I love it because I feel like it really describes who we are. And then the fitting was just molded to the unfinished diamond. My dad was a jeweler for like 40 years and he was like, who would buy a raw, uncut? There's no beauty to it. And that's just it. It's beautiful. It's raw. It's real. It's natural state. It was a beautiful time for us. We just took ALS diagnosis head on. One of the key things with ALS is to stay ahead of the game. And so immediately Brian started recording his voice and we took it as we're going to record his voice because ALS, for those that don't know, eventually it takes away your voice, but you're cognitive the whole time. You can feel, you have all your nerves work. They just don't talk to your muscles. And that's the problem. They don't communicate. And so your eyes always work and your brain always work. I'm not a scientific type of person here, but it's like everything I think above your like brainstem works. So your mouth does not work and then your lungs and all your organs. But it's different for everyone. Nobody's ALS journey is the same. And so, but the outcome is 2 to 5 years is life expectancy because most people don't choose to do the things that could be life-saving because it's hard. It's a very hard life and you have to have the will to live and the will to go through the hard times and you have to have the support. And overall, the worst part of the whole disease is it's expensive. It's a very expensive disease because insurance does not cover what you need to stay alive. I've always wondered like, why do they say 2 to 5 years? And now that we're at year four, I understand it now. And it's really sad. And it's mainly because people don't have the finances for it. And we don't have the finances for it either. But thankfully, we've rallied a community around us that supports us year round. So from the beginning with ALS, we hit head on, recorded Brian's voice from the beginning, not knowing if we ever needed it. Maybe he was going to have a slow progression and not need it. But we didn't view doing those things as sad. We were never in denial about it. It was just like, this is what you do. If we're going to do this, which we chose, we're going to do it. Immediately, we got a team together to renovate our house to make it accommodating. And I did not want the house to look like a hospital because that's not thriving in life. Like if we have to look like he lives in a hospital, right? And so I was just very proactive in looking the long run, like what is best in the long run, not short term, because you do all these short term things and ALS changes so quickly that by the time that renovation for this short term use is done, he's past that season. Mm. In our home, we did everything where it's aesthetically looks like a beautiful home still, but it all meets the needs of someone in a power chair. And so that was a huge undertaking for our community to come in and to get that done during COVID. Remember, everything is during COVID, like the shutdown of the world. Every time you go to the doctor, or what they have for ALS patients is called clinic. So you go to clinic where, imagine a round room and they have a patient in every room and the doctors just circulate. So we would see 8 doctors in one appointment. And that way we wouldn't have to travel and go to so many doctor's appointments. We loved going, but it was very long and draining. But you would see your pulmonologist, your neurologist, your dietitian, your physical therapist, your occupational therapist, your pain management doctor. And so we just got this beautiful relationship with all these doctors, fascinating people that literally have to deliver such bad news all the time. And so even for us going to those appointments, it's like our goal was to go in there and just bring light into sadness that they have to deal with all the time. And so at this point, we are 4 years in with these doctors. I mean, we have cell phone numbers, we chat, Brian talks to them over WhatsApp. And so we've really have found this really great communities. I mean, we have doctors stop over at the house, and it's really been a beautiful experience here with our ALS clinic. Everyone talks to you as if you're dying. Like, that's kind of the way that it's looked at, because the reality for most is it is. And so they tell you, eat whatever you want, do whatever you want, just live life to the fullest, basically because they're saying you're going to die soon. We had watched friends who had, you know, kids with cancer, and they do their make a wish trip. And I was like, I don't want to wait until we have to make a wish. Early on in our raising our kids, we had decided that Christmas was no longer about gift giving and things like that. So we made memories. Memories was our thing. It is what we did. We did family trips, and on the cheap too, because like I said, there are 7 of us. We are not a high income family, and we were, you know, 7 kids, I mean, 7 of us in one hotel room. Bring sleeping bags, kids. Yeah. But it was part of the fun.
Yeah.
And the way I would say it is, hey, we're not camping in a tent. At least we're in a hotel room. Okay.
That's right. Perspective.
Yeah, that's right. And so for Christmas morning, they would wake up and there was an envelope there, and it was a trip. They would read it. Santa had this whole trip of spreadsheets planned out. And that is what we did. We did adventures, and our kids loved it. They expected it. They hoped that that's what would happen the next year. So with ALS, as soon as flights opened from COVID, Brian and I hopped on a plane to San Francisco, he was in a wheelchair already at this point, but he could like kind of shuffle still, and rented a convertible Mustang. It was big enough to fit our one suitcase in the back seat, and I would have to shove that wheelchair in the back. Then we drove Highway 1 all the way down for about 2 weeks. We got to Coronado Bay, which is where we were going to fly back home out of, and got word that our kids were exposed to COVID. Mm. And at that time, COVID was very, very scary.
Right.
If you remember, quarantining for 10 days, and we didn't know what COVID would do to Brian. I mean, the last thing we needed was his lungs compromised. So our 5 kids, where they were exposed, was with my brother and his wife. And so they were like, y'all may as well stay out longer. So we decided to drive home all the way from Coronado Bay to New Orleans, Louisiana.
Oh my God.
And our little Mustang convertible.
How amazing.
And so, yeah, so that was the beginning of us making tons of memories with our kids. And we did a lot of trips. 2 years into his diagnosis, we had just done a big trip to New York. It was really a girls' trip. It was for me with all of my girlfriends, but Brian had to come along because I was his caregiver and I was the only one who knew how to do everything. So he likes to say he was my arm candy for that week in New York. And so he was fully wheelchaired at that time with a power chair. And the only thing he still had at that time was breathing on his own. That was our last trip. And then 2 months later, he got the flu. And it was the time to decide tracheotomy or not. And it's a big decision because the tracheotomy is where the cost comes in. After you have a tracheotomy, you have to have care for 24/7. You cannot ever be left alone. The hospital trains you on how to care for it. You do not get any home help. Everything for us with caregiving is out of pocket. And luckily, I'm able to do it and I do a lot of it. And our kids are now older teenagers, and so they help a lot as well. After the tracheotomy, once he learned and, you know, was at terms with, I live basically on a ventilator, it was kind of a change of mindset. It's like, okay, so you're not going to die now. So now what? How does this life look like? You know, and that was a very hard mental game for him. That's when he started writing his book. He's always been a writer. He's a speaker. He's a gorgeous outlook on life. So he started writing a book and he just got his vision one day for it. It just snapped. We were actually in Florida on a beach trip. He got this vision and he was like, all right, I'm ready. Ready to write the book. Went home and he just took this like deep dive into writing like 6 hours a day. I'm saying writing, but writing for Brian means typing on a computer using his eyes only. So his eyes connect as the mouse to the computer that he has in front of him. And he literally types letter for letter. And so 6 months later, he has written a book, 83,000 words, all on his own.
Unreal.
Not a ghostwriter, none of that. He literally typed every word. And for me, in all of this, prior to his tracheotomy, I and the kids were his sole caregiver for 2.5 years. And I was at the point where I was ready to hop on a plane and never come back.
Yeah.
I was so done.
It had to be exhausting. No matter how much you love somebody. I mean, I felt that way with just having like my first baby.
Right.
I was like, this is exhausting.
Yes. Brian and I talk about this all the time. So it's imagine having a newborn and they never grow up. Mm-hmm. We joke, we have very dark humor in our house too. It's fun. It's having a newborn baby and it never ends.
You can't go in and get a cup of coffee while you have the baby on your hip. Your baby is bigger than you.
I had to learn how to pick him up, transfer him from wheelchair to toileting to the bed. Our kids literally started working out like we got weights in the backyard because our kid, two of them were like, we need to start getting stronger so we could help mom lift dad. And I'm by no means like a, yes, we talk about it all the time. We don't know who they would be without ALS today. They would probably be typical teenagers, but they're not. And they are really blossoming into these. I want to be them when I grow up.
How beautiful.
Like they are amazing. Yes. But they did miss their childhood. They did miss that. And that's what I fundraise for. I fundraise money so we can pay caregivers so they can be kids. And so I can go to their games and I can go to their activities and I can bring Brian to those things too, but I just can't do them alone because then I can't pay attention when I'm at the event. So I have to have a caregiver with me. I mean, I don't have to, but I choose to when we can afford it to have them because even a vacation, we go as a family of seven, but I mean, 75% of the time we're working because we're all working for Brian and we don't get to really do those things that you can do. Like we planned a 30-day road trip, which was great. This was pre-trach and our whole family went and we did all this stuff. But it's like, I had a friend do a similar trip, but her family did it in 1 week. And they did all these things that I'm like, oh, we didn't do that. We didn't. And I was like, oh, that's right. Because everything I planned was handicap friendly. Mm-hmm. We didn't ride horses and we didn't go on boats and things like that.
And it all took a lot longer.
Yes, yes. And you just forget. But it's as bad and as ugly as this disease is, our family is just come together and made something so ugly, so beautiful. And sometimes I'm sad that other people don't get to experience this life, because we live a very slow, slow life. I mean, for Brian and I to have a conversation, it takes a very long time, but I just sit there and I listen and I wait. Most of the time, I already know what he's going to say because we've been married quite a while, but we don't talk about fluffy stuff. If we're going to take energy to talk, it's real talk. And we just both know literally the inside and outside of each other, because it's really all we have. All we have are our words. Do we just cherish our time together with our words? He's a lot more poetic than I am, and so his words are a lot prettier. I was definitely a typical wife that I raised babies. That's what I did. I didn't pay bills. I didn't know who our plumber was or air conditioner guy or any of those. I didn't know any of that. And now I know everything and I know how to do it all. That was a big learning curve. Not that I couldn't do it. I didn't have to. Why would I do it? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, we were married at that point for 17 years and he had done it all along. So, but just adding all of those, I mean, I don't know what it's like to be a single mom, but at the same time, I think this is a little bit into the life of a single mom when you're running the whole show. Mm-hmm. And it's hard.
Yeah.
And I look back at moms that I've known that have been single moms. And I have a dear friend that her husband passed away unexpectedly and she has four little ones. And it was actually just a couple months after Brian's diagnosis. So we've been journeying this together. And it's like, she likes to say, we're just different fruit, but we're in the same basket, experiencing everything differently, but yet the same.
You are this extraordinarily capable person who will figure things out, who will make things happen. You are going to keep showing up no matter what. Any resistance, any obstacles, these are just problems to solve. Mm-hmm. We're going to get through this. There's not like, oh, let's self-doubt and worry ourselves and procrastinate. It's let's face this stuff. And you are so true to who you are in every one of these situations. It would be so easy to just feel completely overwhelmed and succumb to the worry and the fear to a degree that you get paralyzed, which is honestly what happens to so many of us when we are faced with giant life-altering surprises. And so I'm curious how you found your way out of the bed to like get in there and face all of this and find your way through.
I wonder that too. Sometimes I use the word personality a lot and the kids hate when I say that. They're like, don't say the P word, mom. I would say that I don't have a choice, but I think I do. When I had my fourth boy, so 0 year old, I had a 2 year old, a 3 year old, and a 4 year old. Just picture that for a minute.
Oh my gosh. It's like your life was training you for this.
Right. So the organization, the planning, all of those things, I don't know if that's who I was going to be if I didn't have kids and get married at 19, but I did whatever I had to do to really survive and not run away, right? And not lay in bed all day. I mean, these little people needed me and they needed me high functioning. Mm-hmm. I have 3 siblings and he has 1 sibling. And that generation of parents, they kind of just raised you all together like as one unit and didn't really, or at least that's my experience. And they didn't really raise us as individuals. They weren't like, oh, you need to be disciplined this way, but your brother needs to be disciplined this way. We were just all lumped together, right? And we were just raised together. And I vowed not to do that. And Brian did not want to do that either. And so we really took this approach of learning each kid and how they responded and how they worked and what they needed, which that was exhausting. That is why people don't do that. It's exhausting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it takes a lot of thought and a lot of intentionality. Starting that long ago with that mentality really helped me move into this season of life with a lot of grace, because I've already trained myself to be that way. And if you would see the things I had to MacGyver to get Brian in wheelchairs and holding a phone, holding a cup, holding, you know, whatever it was so that he could feel like he could still do things. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I go in there, I see it, And immediately my wheels start spinning and I want to make it happen. I want to make it the best experience for whoever it is. And at some point it's a good and bad thing, but I do give everything, all that I can give.
Yeah.
I just do it. I say I don't have an option, but I guess at the same time, I know plenty of people that if they're depressed, they just stay in bed for months. And I don't see that as an option for me. There's too many people that rely on me. And I mean, I do it all for myself too, for my own sanity. I'm in charge of too many people and too many things, and I have to keep going, like, for them, you know.
I believe deeply that the only thing we cannot have too much of is love, and that every time we love someone or something else, it just introduces so much complexity. There's more risk, there's more loss, there's more fear. And yet, it's always the trade-off I would make.
Yeah. It's fascinating, though, going through this disease with Brian, the amount of people, though, that are more withdrawn. Instead of coming over more, hanging out with Brian more, it's like you just said, it's the fear of loss, the fear that he's going to die, and the people just go away.
Yeah.
I feel like we are more connected now with, this is why we say, I don't even know if we could take ALS away now, but I don't think we would take it away from the past. If they wanted to cure it and make Brian a whole person today, yes. But what we have learned and experienced from this diagnosis, we would not take that away. And it's a weird thing, I think, for people to hear when we say things like that. But the community of people that we have now, that instead of running from the fear, it's a whole new group of people in our lives. And it's just been so beautiful. I mean, even down to meeting you. And ALS has taken down all the walls. There are no secrets in our house. Our kids know everything. Our kids tell us everything. We've been able to walk through with them in all of the typical teenage things. We're all able just to see life at such a precious state. And we don't worry. Like, I am not worried. I always tell my mom, I'm like, Mom, you worry enough for me. Like, I don't even put worry on my plate. Like, not even one of the things I do. I don't worry.
What a gift.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to say I don't get stressed out. I mean, I definitely, you know, take medicine for that.
Smart.
Yes. But the stress is, it's nothing long term. Our kids come in, they talk to Brian, they tell us about their day. And it's just, that's just like not even typical, especially in teenage boys. Our oldest, he's a freshman in college, and he was so stressed out because he wanted to go away at some point, pre-ALS probably. He's an artist. He thought about going to SCAD, but he's like, I'm the oldest brother. What am I going to do if one of my brothers get a flat tire and I'm in Atlanta?
Oh.
Like, I want to be that for them because I had it. I had dad do it for me, and now they don't. Of course, you don't want your kids to alter their life for things like this. But the way that I worked it through with him was, let's look at life in 2 years. Let's just look in short-term increments. You can stay home at university here, do your 2 years here. If dad is steady and doing fine and you feel like your heart can handle being away from home, then go. And so that's what he did. His first year, he's stayed at home. He's at the University of New Orleans. And I made him move out of the house though, still. Go live on campus. It's 2 miles away from our house. But when he's at his apartment, he's not hands-on. Because when a kid walks in the door of this house, you're hands-on. It just comes with the territory of being home. And they have chores, but if I need to go on a phone call or something, they have to go sit with dad. There's no complaints. It's just what we do here. And so now for our second kid, Jonah, he is a senior in high school. And he feels okay leaving because Brian's at a good place. Whereas with Micah, Brian wasn't even traked yet. And so Jonah is going all the way to Pennsylvania and he's going to Villanova and he's fine with that. And we're fine with that. We're happy for it. We're already planning, how are we going to get Brian there? He's going to go see him, go see the university. We just do everything intentional here. We're on purpose. Our kids give us so much grace because we can't be at everything. Brian cannot be at everything. And they're okay with that. And my kids are so aware of me. And they're so, they know, like, Mom, this weekend, I don't have anything. Do you want to go make plans with friends? I'll stay home with Dad. Because I don't generally have help on the weekends. When I talk about our family, it sounds like a storybook and it sounds impossible. And I think where I'm getting now with humanity is I'm so sad for people. This should be typical. And we would love to help people get there.
Yeah.
And that's our story to tell. And you don't have to have ALS to get there.
The other thing that I think is really important to your perspective, and the thing that ends up getting in the way for most of us navigating change in life, you're willing to accept change. Over and over throughout this conversation, you've said things like, it may not look like we expected, or this is how we do it here. And what is that saying? This isn't the way any of us dreamed life would look. And it is the ability to accept and grow within what is that allows you to not while away your precious moments together with worry, but to be present and to create new beauty within the constraints of what is that never could have existed outside of it. Thank you for demonstrating for all of us what it looks like to live in acceptance. And I think maybe that's the light I saw off in the darkness that day. Uplifters, I'm going to try to convince Christy to come join us in New York in May. So maybe you'll get to meet her there. For all of you listening, I hope you'll join me in supporting the Jansons in the life that they are living and modeling. There are some really great opportunities to financially support them in this big life that they are choosing to create against so much adversity. And it'll feel really good to know that what you're giving is contributing to so much love. Thank you for listening to the Uplifters podcast. If you're getting a boost from these episodes, please share them with the Uplifters in your life and then join us in conversation over at theuplifterspodcast.com. Head over to Spotify, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast and like, follow, and rate our show. It'll really help us connect with more uplifters, and it'll ensure you never miss one of these beautiful stories. Mwah! Big love.
Painted water sunshine with rosemary and thyme. Dwell in the perplexing, though you find it vexing. Toss a star and hover, be your own best lover. Relish in a new prime, plant a tree in springtime. Dance with idle hindsight, bring the sun to twilight. Lift you up, whoa. Lift you up, whoa. Lift you up, whoa. Lift you up. Lift you up. Whoa. Lift you up. Whoa. Lift you up. Whoa. Lift you up.
Mommy, stop crying. You're disturbing the peace.